Art and Soul. An anime diet audio column about anime, religion, and ethics. This Christian moment is brought to you by Michael Huang, because seminarians will always find an excuse to preach. Issue 2, Evangelion and the Gnostic Impulse. Tomorrow, September 1st, marks the release of the first Evangelion remake movie. I got into anime because of Eva, so any revamped version of Hideaki Anno's frustrating, raw, and utterly brilliant creation is news for me. Am I excited about the remake? Well, this first film covers only the equivalent of episodes 1 through 6 of the television series, so unless there's some drastic plot twists already, it probably won't hold any surprises. It's a show, after all, that I've seen something like 5 times. I remember I didn't even really get into the show, or appreciate its depth, until well into the second half of the series. That's when it finally unleashes its genuinely unique and harrowing properties, its exposed emotional S2 engine. And that's also where a lot of the genuinely Gnostic characteristics of the show start to come through. Now, I have to admit, I was initially drawn to the show because of its title. Anything that's called Neon Genesis Evangelion is going to at least raise a few eyebrows for old Christian theology-loving me. I do remember, though, feeling a little disappointed at the rather superficial use of Christian imagery. I mean, come on. Cross-shaped explosions? Big white mama goddess hanging up on a crown of cross? What kind of cracker cult manual was on his smoking? The psychological stuff made a lot more sense, actually, since in many ways, the journey Shinji goes through is not a religious or a spiritual one so much as a psychological one, a journey from self-hatred and self-absorption into an acceptance of others. I remember back then seeing all kinds of other strange imagery and other strange things, you know, the Room of Goth, you know, the Tree of Life, and all this other stuff, and I was wondering where a lot of that actually came from, and, well, the answer really made everything makes sense once I realized it. And that answer is Gnosticism, and its medieval Jewish stepchild, Kabbalah. What's Gnosticism? Lately, because of the Da Vinci Code, people have been hearing a lot more about it, but the version Dan Brown concocts, filled with sex, orgies, and lots of wonderful female sexuality, is more than just heretical. It's just simply wrong, factually. Genuine Gnosticism, you see, was a variant of Christianity, plus a lot of Platonic philosophy thrown in, as well as a few elements from other mystery religions. It was most popular between the 2nd to 4th centuries, when it was, yes, violently suppressed by the newly dominant Orthodox Catholic Church. It's quite complicated in all of its details. That was actually one of the things that made them appealing and special to some. But basically, Gnostics believed that human souls are divine sparks trapped inside our corrupt, mortal, and material bodies. Our souls originally came from God, or the One, and we long to be reunited and reincorporated into the One again, where our souls originally came from. But we chose to fall into material bodies instead. That's the lesson of the fall of the Adam and Eve story, according to the Gnostics, is that we fell into our bodies. Gnostics, you see, really hate the body. They really hate physical existence. The vast majority of them just absolutely loathe sex. And so the physical world for them is really just an illusion. You know, your body's just a shell for the real you that's hidden deep inside, that divine spark, that godlike part of you. And the real truth and your true home is the world of the spirit. So the goal in Gnosticism is to wake up to who you really are, your divinity, your God in you, your soul trapped inside your shell, and to do everything you can to pay as little attention to your body while you're still here, living a purely spiritual life, fasting, avoiding sex, you know, avoiding other people, until finally, after you've said the right passwords and gotten past the right spiritual guardians, they're called eons and archons and a bunch of other hierarchies that are really, really complicated, you'll finally be reunited with the One, returning to the source of all things. Now, that should sound kind of familiar. It sounds just like the Human Instrumentality Project at the end of Evangelion. Or it sounds like sort of what happens at the end of the first Ghost in the Shell movie. Or it sounds like what the bad god, Eri, wants to do in Serial Experiments Lane. In all these shows, there's a desire to overcome the limits of bodily existence. Loneliness, separation, misunderstanding, physical pain, frailty. Sometimes it takes the form of being joined into a big computer network, or becoming one big slop of orange goo. But it's really the same desire nonetheless, to become perfectly reunited and united with everybody and all things so that there would be no more pain, no more alienation. And you do notice something all these other shows have in common too, right? That their main characters are often deeply alienated, or at least they feel really separated from everyone else. I was happy in the haze of a drunken hour, but heaven knows I'm miserable now. This really isn't an accident. Eric Vogelin once said that Gnosticism actually always appealed the most to those who were alienated and outcast from society. It always starts with a sense that something in the world just isn't right. Something is not what it looks like it really is. And everyone else seems oblivious to it, but you see, you get it. You can't be happy like everyone else because you see the way things really are. Nobody understands you because they can't. They don't know what you know. And they pick on you because they don't. Two lovers entwined, pass me by, and heaven knows I'm miserable now. Well, you know, doesn't that sound like adolescence? Like the geek experience? You can sort of see why Shinji would want to turn everybody into orange goo at the end of Evangelion. You wouldn't have to hurt anymore, because of all that misunderstanding. If you were Lane, you could literally become somebody else in The Wired, not just little girl dressed up in a bear outfit with a family that doesn't pay attention to you. In both those shows, that's the temptation, to succumb to the oneness and become an indistinguishable mass, no one having to hurt or feel or be misunderstood anymore. But it's only a temptation. What's interesting is that in the Eva movie, and at the end of Lane, the characters find their way to reaffirm being in a body again. Shinji returns from the sea and sees Asuka. Lane gives herself up so that the Wired won't swallow everybody whole, and discovers that her father creator is actually the one holding her together. Both of them are saying, a life where you can't tell the difference between yourself and everyone else isn't really life anymore. There's an even deeper human need to be just ourselves, and not others. And to do that, you also have to choose to be limited, at least in this life. You have to accept that there will be misunderstanding and pain and rejection and bad memories. But the price of becoming one with everyone to get rid of those things is just too high. In the end, it's about learning to love yourself, and loving yourself is, as the other half of the Great Commandment says, the basis of being able to love one another. This Christian moment is brought to you by Michael Huang, because seminarians will always find an excuse to preach. You've been listening to Art and Soul Number 2, Evangelion and the Gnostic Impulse. Finally, brothers, whatever is true, whatever is noble, whatever is right, whatever is pure, whatever is lovely, whatever is admirable, if anything is excellent or praiseworthy, think about such things. See you next time.